And so I realized in that moment that I wasn't atheist, actually. I was sad. I was cynical. I was tired of things not working out. I was tired of grappling with the vagaries of life. And so I realized that the assumptions that I wanted to hold on to had to be more productive than where they were currently getting me. Happy Friday. Welcome back to another episode of Morning Coffee with Rick Alexander. For those of you that don't know, some of these episodes I script out, specifically if it's something like an idea that I'm like really wanting to nail or work through, and then some of them are things that I like just riff on. And normally when my writing is really taken up by something else, which it is right now because I'm writing a ton of academic papers for school, and I'm also working on a rewrite / heavy deep edit of Ambitious Heroes and Heartache. So that's taking a lot of my writing. And so the podcast during those times are more me riffing on topics and ideas that I'm sort of mentally grappling with. And I don't, you know, I like the scripted ones because I'm very pointed in my knowledge. And I also really like doing this because sometimes I'll listen back when I'm really free flowing in that sort of state of flow, you could say. Sometimes the idea antenna is up in a way that you can grab concepts that you didn't even really know that you knew. And that happens with writing too often. I'll look back at a page or two of that I wrote and I'm like, oh, I don't even think I knew that before I did. Which is funny because the state of flow, like the human state of flow that's been studied, and you know, I've talked about it quite often, and it's something we're all sort of fascinated with because it's almost like the optimal way to be here in a sense, right? It's like the feeling of ultimate meaning. Well, what I found interesting is that the Greeks, and this has nothing to do with today's show, but the Greeks in ancient Greek culture, they use the word telos when talking about flow, the human state of flow. And the reason they did is because telos means like the end of something or the completion of something. And so the thought is that you reach the end of conscious awareness. And so then you move into this other liminal space where you're neither conscious nor unconscious. You just are. You're at one with your environment. I'd say that that's what flow is. It's a signal that you are in the exact right spot for your environment. And if you could break that down, it would be something like rooted half in what you know, while also simultaneously exploring that which you don't know. So that's the recipe that gives you that feeling of flow. And so when I do these riffs, I try to find that feeling. And so that's what we're gonna work with in today's show. The other thing that's worth thinking about is I've been grappling with these ideas mentally for a while. And so today is the first time that I'm actually trying to add words and structure to it. And so the whole point behind Morning Coffee is that I can introduce an idea to you, and maybe it means something to you, maybe it doesn't. Maybe you think it's correct, maybe you don't. But I would say there's a better point here, which is just listen to it, right? And just allow it to sink in. Allow yourself to sit with the information that you hear. Allow yourself to say, well, can I find some truth in that? Can I find some fault in that? It's likely, if you're really aware and paying attention, that the answer is yes to both. And that's the human experience. It's always yes to both because we are in this really deep paradox. But the point is, if you can allow that to sit in your consciousness and you can just go about the rest of your day, sometimes the best ideas produce fruit, right? So ideas are something like a catalyst that in your life, they can be a catalyst for really positive transformation that helps you to understand that you can engage with your life in a different way, right? And hopefully a more positive and beneficial way. That's the role that ideas have played in my own life. I know when I first got interested in psychology and watching lectures, I would like be really just taking it all in. It's like drinking through a fire hose. I'm like, well, I don't really know any of this. Maybe it's true, maybe it's not. But one of the things I started to notice is like months down the road of doing this constantly is all of a sudden things started clicking, started making sense. And so what you can find is if you are someone that is interested in personal development, one way to go about it is to listen to ideas, to allow them to sit in your consciousness to ask yourself if you can find truth in them, to ask yourself if you can find fault in them, but then also to just step away from a little bit, right? Telos, the end of consciousness. Just step away from it a little bit and allow it to manifest into whatever it's going to be, right? So sometimes our ideas produce fruit and then sometimes they don't. And when they don't, we just let them go and we consciously just move on. So just a little message on how to receive the word sometimes, you know, as how to receive the message sometimes. And I do this with everything, right? With sermons, I do this. I do this with intellectual lectures, PhD lectures. Like it's all the same thing. I try to listen to it for truth. I try not to hang on to absolute anything, because normally if you hang on to absolute anything, you find that you start meandering off of the path of truth. And so hopefully if you don't even get anything out of this episode or any of my episodes, you can take that away with you so that you can get something out of other people's message and other people's episodes, because it's been a really beneficial way to view the learning process and the growth process, at least in my personal life. The thing I wanted to mention today is today's topic, the thing that I'm going to talk about is theory. And before I get into that, I also want to help you understand that almost everything that you know of is actually theory laden. Now this is, it's two things, right? It's equally destabilizing and liberating at the same time. It's destabilizing because oftentimes we convince ourselves of things. And if we convince ourselves that we know something and it turns out to be not true, then that can get us in trouble and it can be the cause of like existential dread. It's like, oh no, the things I thought, you know, they turn out not to be true. And I think that's why Mark Twain has that quote. He says, it ain't the things that you don't know that get you in trouble. It's what you do know that just ain't so. And so I think that understanding that everything is really theory laden in that way can also be liberating, because you realize, okay, well, I don't have to cling so tight to my beliefs, right? I can hold on a little bit loosely. And it gives you a little bit of liberation to ask yourself, well, what else might be true about this belief system or this world? And like I said, at first, it typically causes existential dread or something like that when you start to get to the bottom of your own beliefs and realize how there are just assumptions in every single worldview. And, you know, I talk about God quite a bit on here, far more than I used to, right? Well, part of that is because when I was in Australia writing my second book, I was grappling with the idea of atheism, agnosticism, or theology, and trying to figure out, what do I really, really believe about this? And I really flirted with atheism for a very long time. I read a lot of books about it, and I was trying to come to grips with it. And one of the things I realized is at the bottom of every single one of these theories is some sort of assumption about reality. Because the truth is, we're something, and at one point there was nothing, right? And so one of the things that science and religion both completely agree on is that it started from nothing and it is expanding. Right, there was first nothingness where there's now somethingness, and at the same time it is going somewhere. And so as I got to the bottom of my own belief system, I realized I had to assume something. And then I started to realize that there's some truth in the fact that what you tune into, what you seek, is what you find. And so then I realized that if I could lay my theories on top of positive assumptions, as in, hey, it is all going somewhere good. There is a plan for all of this. This expansion that the scientists are able to witness, yeah, it is going somewhere. We are growing somewhere. And so you could look at the whole thing as one long drama. And when you start to make assumptions in that way, and then you start to live in that way, you get instant feedback from reality. And so when I was living off of those assumptions, I started to notice that my life was better, right? And so it's just like self-serving sort of loop of your beliefs in your actions. And at the same time, when I was living out the beliefs in atheism, I just found that my life had lacked a lot. Like there was a lot to be desired there. And I'm like, well, you know, one of the questions we need to ask ourselves, since all of this is theory laden, since we don't know any of this stuff for sure, right? Since we can't know anything for sure except what we have experiential knowledge of in the moment, because that's true, then we have to decide what assumptions we want to live out. And so I realized in that moment that I wasn't atheist, actually. I was sad. I was cynical. I was tired of things not working out. I was tired of grappling with the vagaries of life. Yeah, and so I realized that the assumptions that I wanted to hold on to had to be more productive than where they were currently getting me. And then it kind of becomes a method of productivity, right? So what was the feedback that I got from my life when I was living out the idea that there was no God? It's like, well, I didn't feel loved. So, you know, so my life was giving me feedback that this just isn't a great way to be here, do the human thing. Now, for some people, it certainly is, but I just wanted you to understand that that's sort of how I got to the conclusions that I got to. Now, here's today's theory. Like, we're almost 10 minutes into this thing. There's only one human story. So the hero's journey, which I talk about a lot, and I wrote an Ambitious Hero's Heart and Heartache about, is what psychologist Joseph Campbell calls the monomyth. And he says this is the story arc that's at the bottom of all of the human stories that we know, all of the mythology, the stories in the Bible, the stories that you told, the stories we actually live in real life. The monomyth is at the bottom of them. And so furthering that idea comes this idea, which is there's only one true human story, and that is the feeling of wholeness. Like, I believe that what every single human being is actually after in this life is this feeling of wholeness. Now, we all go about it in different ways. So religion, which we've talked about a little bit today, they have explicit language for that journey, right? They say, listen, I have the answer for how you can feel whole, right? And that is your sort of union with God. And so there's a path and there's heritage and there's thousands of people that have done it. But I also understand that in 2020, the traditional religious path, it doesn't work for every single human being. Now, I would ask you, do you think that there's some truth in this idea that what we're all actually after is wholeness? And when we don't have a path that presents us an explicit way of getting to that wholeness, and that would be with the ancient wisdom text, Tao Te Ching, Christianity, you know, the Bhagavad Gita, they all give you this path toward wholeness, okay, based on the culture that you came out of. In the absence of those things, what we then do is we try to find that wholeness in all these other pursuits in the world. And so our pursuits for power, they're for wholeness. We want to feel complete. There's something in the human condition that feels broken, right? Am I wrong on this? Or I don't know, ask yourself that. There's a longing that takes place in the human spirit, especially as you're sort of forming. And I think, honestly, marketers and also religious types that don't have their motivation maybe in the best place, they know that and they'll capitalize on it, right? Marketers capitalize on this the most. And I think that falling in love in this life is one of the ways that we are seeking that wholeness, like falling in romantic love, I mean. And out of that, you get all kinds of shadows of that behavior. And that's why we have a saying, you complete me. That's why we have that saying, right? It's stupid, right? It's not a good way to go about wholeness, because if someone can complete you, then they can also break you. Right, so it's like it's actually just a codependent state that you're giving your access to your own completion and wholeness away to somebody else. You have to be very careful about that, right? But we all go through it, we all have to go through it. And as much as I tell you what you actually need, right, what everybody actually needs is to get their heart broken and to get backed over, right? It's like the truck runs you over and then they stop and then they back over you to make sure that you actually got it broken. That experience, although it's awful, it helps, right? It helps you understand that your wholeness and your completeness cannot come from another person. Now, sometimes we take that the wrong way, and when we get broken down like that, we end up just searching for more people because we haven't been broken sufficiently enough, or we haven't seen that our codependent state is creating the problem in the first place, right? The problem is that you can be broken. Because what I actually believe in this life is once you stumble upon your wholeness, can't be taken, right? The real thing, the real feeling of completion, I don't know that it could be taken by anything else in this world. And that, coincidentally, is what has made religion so hard to thwart, right? It's like the Roman Empire did everything that they could to stop Christianity. And one of the reasons that they were unable to do so is because killing them didn't do it, right? So it's like that was what the Roman Empire was extremely good at, was killing people. At one point, I was watching on a documentary a couple nights ago that there was this land that the Roman Empire had expanded into and taken over, and to send a message, they stapled somebody to a cross every 100 feet for 60 miles. Could you imagine even thinking about going against the Empire when you just walked or took a horse through 60 miles of dead people stapled to crosses? Could you imagine that? And so they got really, really good at that. Well, one of the reasons that eventually that Christianity ended up becoming the predominant religion in the Empire was because you couldn't take away their wholeness. You know, you couldn't kill them. You couldn't. There was nothing you could do. You could kill them, but it would just make other people. It would just reinforce their faith, because there's this idea in religion that your completeness doesn't come from anywhere else in this world. And I think that that's the importance of having or pursuing spiritual formation in this life. And I don't think that it matters. I truly don't think that you have to take a traditional religious path to get there. Like it seems to me that that's not the case. And oftentimes the traditional religious path won't get you there. But recognizing that what is in you is far deeper than something that could be broken or taken by this world is extremely valuable. It helps you to see through fear, is what it does, right? Because the world can present fears to take things from you. It can take your freedom from you. But when you find a true freedom, a true completeness, you realize that it can't be taken. And so one of the things that's very interesting too is, we'll go back to the Roman Empire, is if you really read about a lot of these emperors, right, the whole elite class, the Senate in the Roman Empire and also the emperors, they're all on this ego trip, right? And because what the ego, you got to think ego is of this physical world. It's a very small sliver of who you actually are, the actual self, but it convinces itself of its importance. But you could also think about it this way, right? The ego deep down knows that it's going to die, because you know that you're going to die. So when you say, I know I'm going to die, that's the ego. Remember, ego is I. Understanding that it's got a shelf life, that it's limited, it's finite in its capacity for existence. And so what it does is it starts to look around the world and try to find things that will ensure its continued existence. And so oftentimes when in the Roman Empire, what you saw is people that were pursuing power at the price of other people's lives, at the price of their own morality and soul. They were pursuing power because what happens is, in this desire for wholeness that we all have, if the ego hijacks that desire or believes that it can achieve it in itself, right, by something in this world, which is where the ego exists, then what you find is that it leads you from that path of wholeness. You'll always be pursuing forever. There will never be enough power. There will never be enough sustainment for your existence. And I think in some way that's probably what led to the fact that we even have a gravestone when we die, right? It's like this final plea for permanence in an impermanent world. And so the reason I wanted to present this theory to you, that there's only one human story and that it's this, that it's seeking wholeness and completion in itself, is because you can look back at your own life and you can look at the decisions you've made out of that lens, and you can see which ones are going to work and which ones aren't going to, right? So you can see, if I put my identity in this relationship and I ask for my wholeness this way, I'm setting myself up to be rebroken, you know? And if I put it in power and I put it in this ego trip and in the material that the ego can gain, maybe it's going to lead me to a place that doesn't actually exist. That's what hedonic adaptation is. It states that as you pursue things that you think will make you more happy, more whole, you could say, based on this theory, after you achieve those things, the human is bound to fall back to their same relative level of happiness. And you've probably noticed this in your own life. Like, you've probably thought, once I get this money, or once I get this job, or once I get this person, or once I get this whatever, then I'll be complete, then I'll feel whole, then I'll at least be on my way. And it never happens that way. You always fall back down to your same level of desire and want and need. And that's why when you want happiness, there's wholesome ways to get it, and there's the shortcut, but the shortcut always leads back to where you are right now. That's what hedonic adaptation states. You'll always fall back to your same level of happiness. I've talked about this before as your sort of mental set point. It's the point that your brain is able to achieve a emotional homeostasis. And even if it's not serving you, will often stay there for a really long time. You can think about the brain has two points, like two sort of goals. So the first one is survival. That's what the brain does. It engages with your environment in a way, and it manipulates the environment and the inputs from your environment in a way that makes its survival possible. And then there's another side of the mind, which is the meaning making, right? You're chasing a subjective sense of meaning, which is the input from the cosmos that you're in the exact right place for where you are supposed to be. And that's why this incompleteness, this longing to feel complete, sucks so bad. Because what you're actually chasing is that meaning making. And what you'll find if you're not careful sometimes is that the survival part of your mind and the meaning making part of your mind are at odds. And they're competing for the same space. So, that being said, I wanted to lay out some of the ways that I've felt that feeling of wholeness in its lasted. And so the first one was this time where I was really going through what I would consider to be my personal dark night of the soul. And it was actually, dusk of the soul, because I was like heading into the dark night, and I was like, things were starting to not mean anything to me anymore. I was starting to feel very apathetic about my environment. Things were not working out. I was starting to shoulder some failures, the things that I thought I had wanted for a long time.